Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the second day, Tespa Sivan, Tashas B'Ha'aloscha, Tavshin Pei, 5780, the first day, Monday, 1 June 2020, podcasting from what even too many Jews call the West Bank, which is a variation on the practice in Auschwitz of effacing Jewish names and replacing them with serial numbers burnt into their forearms as if they were diseased cattle to be registered for extermination. A Jew who calls Judea the West Bank has been spiritually kidnapped by anti-Jews, using their vocabulary to strip this country, these hills, of their connection to the Jewish people. Judea is the Latinate name for the tribal land of the tribe of Yehudah, the origin of the word Jew. How the people who put out newspapers in this country that use the term West Bank, how have they been so hypnotized by International Anti-Judendom, World Anti-Jewry, who cannot bear the thought that Judea is once again in the hands of a traditionally despised nation. No, says World Anti-Jewry, this is the West Bank, now occupied illegally by the criminal Jews. In this week's edition of Phantom Nation, we will consider the contemporary Jewish heresy of supporting the idea of another nation having a sovereign state in our historic, biblically promised land, which contradicts the Bible. The topic at hand is the growing opposition to the so-called deal of the century that proposes to deny Jews in Judea, some, the right to grow and support, instead handing over 70% of Judea and Samaria to the greatest Jew killers since the Germans and their willing collaborators in the lands they overran in their project to seek out and find and murder every Jew on the planet. Although one is sure of the good intentions of the designers of the deal of the century, crafted by Jews in the diaspora, who never lived here, David Friedman and Jared Kushner, they tragically continue to use the lexicon and concepts of the two-state solution by their very use, cripple and skew clear thinking. They also, unawares, are trashing the Bible, these Sabbath-observant Jews, by opposing the gift of this land to the children of Israel. And we will get started after the following message or messages from Israel News Talk Radio.
Israel is located in one of the most volatile areas in the world. Israel is an island of stability in a sea of war and unrest. In the midst of this turmoil, Israel stands out as a beacon of order and human progress. Each week we update you on what's happening in this, the Jewish state, a true light unto the nations. This is Jay Shapiro. Join me every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the second day, Tes B'Sivan, Parashas B'Ha'aloscha, Tavshin Pei 5780, the first day, Monday, 1 June 2020, webcasting from an island of civilization in a sea of barbarians whose civilized Jewish behavior triggers a murderous envy in the hearts of these surrounding homicidal Hamites, the 550 million of them, mostly Muslims, who surround little Israel, with its now almost 7 million Jews. Now, one principal news story these days is of the emerging resistance by Jews who actually live in Judea and Samaria, unlike David Friedman and Jared Kushner, who designed our future, the deal of the century, that when unveiled some weeks back, won much applause and many smiles here, but now, on closer inspection, some of us recoil in disappointment, to say the least. But maybe we should not be so surprised, because the architects, Friedman and Kushner, have never lived here. When they were selected for this task by the president, I was not pleased for that very reason. David Friedman's father was a conservative rabbi in the Five Towns on Long Island, and they are men notorious for being fence-sitters, for wanting to please both sides. Resisting the latest radical break with authentic Jewish thinking among the schismatic reformers, but then 5 years later, adopting their reforms. Over the last generation, the conservative movement lost a third of its synagogues, closed down, no customers. David Friedman has been, I believe, Donald Trump's bankruptcy lawyer. Trump had more than one. Friedman has been a generous contributor to the community at Beit El. I don't doubt his intentions. I doubt he knows the Arabs and Islam well enough to be so involved. Likewise, Mr. Kushner, who was a 12-year-old boy in 1993 when the so-called Oslo peace process was signed on the White House lawn, the Oslo abomination, of the Prime Minister of the State of Israel, shaking the blood-soaked hands of Yasser Arafat, the greatest assassin of Jews, assassin being a word that comes out of Arabic culture, that anti-Semitic mass-murdering criminal butcher of people and terrorist atrocities, that psychopathic Muslim maniac and pedophile. I doubt 12-year-old Jared had any sense at that time of just who this Behema Afansei Fis was. That's a Yiddish expression for a beast on 2 feet. He may have been aware of the handshake on the White House lawn, big news, but had no experience of the horrors this enemy of civilization was responsible for. I thought both of them, Friedman and Kushner, had no useful experience of the Middle East, and the mentality of creatures such as Arafat and Abbas. Abbas, who wrote a thesis that won him the title Doctor, a book proving there was no Holocaust, and the Zionists in Europe worked in cahoots with the Nazis. So these foreigners here, these two New York Jews, with no relevant experience here, designed the deal of the century that, not surprisingly, unwittingly, is made corrupt by continuing with the words and concepts of the so-called Oslo peace process that in truth was the Oslo human sacrifice process. Sacrifice to the pagan gods of international anti-Jewry. Adolf Hitler, may his name never be forgotten, spoke of international Judentum, international Jewry, and I answer, there's also an international anti-Jewry, which today wallows in the belief that we Jews stole Palestine from the putatively prehistoric Palestinian people, and that belief is embedded in the so-called deal of the century. The deal envisions the creation of a state for the ancient Palestinians in Palestine because they deserve a state, just like the Jews. The very idea that the Jews have an exclusive leasehold on Palestine makes world anti-Jewry very uncomfortable. The Jews have to share their ancient homeland with the Palestinians, who have as much of a right to statehood in this country as the Jews. The Jews are not the chosen people with an exclusive right to rule in the Promised Land. The Oslo abomination was saluting and respecting the right of the Palestinian nation, headed by Yasser Arafat, to have a state in the heart of the land promised to the Jewish people in the five books of Moses, promised 180 times. Kushner and Friedman accept the rightness of respecting the right of the Palestinians to a state, which continues with the conceptual corruption of the original Oslo documents. The handshake on the White House lawn was made by Shimon Peres and Yitzhak Rabin, the former, who read to his future bride not love poetry, but Das Kapital. The latter, Rabin, was raised in a ferociously anti-religious communist family. For the two of them, these young idealistic socialists, religion was the opiate of the masses, and they were ready to hand over Judea and Samaria, Judea, the source of the word Jew, hand it over to Yasser Arafat, the greatest Jew killer of the generation. And that willingness, that corruption, that heresy remains alive and well, embedded, however unintentionally, in the deal of the century. Concretely, leaders in Judea and Samaria are now looking at the map, and they see horrible things. Routes 60 and 5 are major arteries in little Judea and Samaria, and according to this plan, they'll be broken up, and the turning of 15 communities into what some call isolated enclaves, islands in a sea of Arabs, I would call them, though, ghettos. These communities will also be forbidden to grow. No, it's not like Pharaoh in Egypt calling for the massacre of Jewish baby boys, but it is in another instance. It's another instance of Jews being legally ordered not to grow, not to expand on land at the very moment barren of any development. It's a continuation of the world pre-Zionism, when the authorities denied Jews real estate rights. That was perfectly normal. Kushner and Friedman want the Israeli government to throttle Jewish growth in Judea. I'm reminded of the abomination in 2005, when Israel drove some 10,000 Jews from their homes, from their communities, their synagogues on land they had every right to live on in Gush Katif. Think of the end of the popular entertainment called Fiddler on the Roof, when the little Jewish village of Anatevka is ordered leveled. The Jews had no right to resist the Russian government's expulsion order and the destruction of their village. And I remember being struck in 2005 by the perfect absence in the Israeli punditocracy of any mention of the irony that here in the born-again Jewish Commonwealth, the government in Jerusalem was driving Jews from homes they had every legal and moral right to remain in and live in peace, harming no one there, no allegedly archaic Palestinians, in fact providing jobs, a livelihood to some of them. Here was the Jewish government in Jerusalem turning fellow Jews in the Promised Land into homeless refugees, acting like an oppressive Gentile regime. And here are Friedman and Kushner designing ghettos for Jews in Judea and Samaria. One of the characteristics of the modern Israeli, that is the ruling class, is their inability to fight for their rights. I myself, in the 1960s, marched for the rights, the civil rights, of Negroes. And I think we Jews have rights too. Versus the Israeli, who when a Muslim barks at him, "We are the ancient Palestinians and you stole our ancient homeland," the Israeli responds by saying, "Let's make a deal. Let's have a compromise. We'll sit down with a cup of coffee and some baklava and work out a deal." When a healthier, more normal response, less Jewishly pathological, might be to answer the Arab who says, "We are the ancient Palestinians and you Jews stole our homeland," you must answer, "No, you're not a Palestinian, and we didn't steal anything."
יפנוף מסוס תבל קריה למלך רב לך נחשפה נפשי מפת מערב המון רחמי נחמר כי אזכרה קדם כבודך אשר גלה ונבך אשר חרב יפנוף מסוס תבל קריה למלך רב לך נחשפה נפשי מפת מערב חמי נחמר כי אזכרה קדם כבודך אשר גלה ונביך אשר חרב ומתנני על כנפי לשרים עד אר ובדמעתי אפרך והתערב הלא את אבנייך חונן ואשקר וטעם רגבייך לפי מדבש יערב ומתנני על כנפי נשרים עד אר ובדמעתי אפרך והתערב הלא את אבנייך חונן ואשקם וטעם רגבייך לפי מדבש יערב יפנוף מסוס תבל קריה למלך רב לך נחשפה נפשי מפת מערב אמרה חמי נחמר כי אזכרה קדם כבודך אשר גלה ונביך אשר חרב
The Tamar Yonah Show.
Tamar? She's sassy.
She's smart.
She's funny.
But she's also a real Jewish mother.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tamar Yonah. And yes, I can be all of those things, but at Israel News Talk Radio, I'm here to bring you the news stories and guests that you may not hear anywhere else. Join me live on air Sundays, Mondays, and Tuesdays for the most unique and bold talk radio in Israel.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
So, heresy is not too strong a word to attach to the deal of the century. Unintentional. Kushner and Friedman are just products of their generation and their home culture. They accept unthinkingly the conventional, delusional, anti-Semitic revisionist history according to which, after the Holocaust, the guilty Western powers told the Jews it was okay to compensate themselves by barging into Palestine and stealing it from the Palestinians, the victims of Zionism, who must be compensated for their victimhood. Ergo, the deal of the century. Versus what an Israel that would be different if it made a different case, an excellent case in international law, the laws of the Goyim, the Gentiles, that Judea and Samaria are rightfully Jewish property. And if that makes Muslims unhappy, so it makes them unhappy. The League of Nations drew a map of the future Palestine intended explicitly on paper as the Jewish homeland, and the map was all the land from the river to the sea. Judea and Samaria and all of the land of the future Gaza Strip that did not exist yet in the 1920s. Judea and Samaria also happen to be essential elements in our religion, and we have the right to demand from the world respect for our religion. Problem is, the state of Israel was established by anti-religious Jews, which is an oxymoron, a contradiction in terms, that has led to the current situation, in which official Israel has never, ever publicly staked a claim to Judea and Samaria, all of it as of right, because it's at bottom a religious claim. What the policy was in 1967 and has remained ever since is that the land taken in 1967 has been held out as a bait, a bargaining chip, tantalizing the enemy with taking possession of some of it, if not all of it. From the beginning, the Alon Plan of 1967 envisioned keeping a significant portion of the spoils of war in Judea and Samaria, never giving back, for example, Hebron. Even the leftists agreed to that. Israel has never publicly claimed the right to the land of Judea and Samaria, in foolish fear that doing that would mean giving citizenship to the Gentiles here, these anti-Semitic Muslims. Naftali Bennett looks at the deal of the century and says the 30% slated for Israeli sovereignty will still contain a quarter million, I believe he calls them Palestinians, like everyone else, and that term poisons clear thought. He's opposed to the quarter million, of course, getting citizenship. It's simply not so that annexing Judea and Samaria will require Israel to give citizenship to all the Arabs here. Where is that written? I would give immediate citizenship to the dwindling and abused of a Christian minority in Arab Judea and Samaria, people who would be most grateful, become good citizens. But to the Muslims here, they would become resident aliens, that status only. Let them live here a decent life, pay taxes, join an HMO, a Kupat Cholim, but they would have no right to vote in our Knesset. And if they do not like that arrangement, which of course world anti-Jewry will call apartheid, they're free to leave and live someplace else. It's simply not so that we must give citizenship to the Arabs if we claim sovereignty. It's not so, and it's even a sick thought. By what brand of ethics are we obligated, after conquering land populated by Jew-haters, after our conquest, we have to give them citizenship in our country? 75% of the men elected to the Palestinian National Assembly or Council or whatever they call it in 2006 were members of the Muslim Brotherhood, who applaud every time a fellow Muslim murders a Jew here. Where is it written that after we assert our ownership over the immovable property, that is the land, we have to embrace these Arabs with their anti-Semitic religion and give them an equal vote in our assembly? This is a sick thought. Jewish psychopathology. There also appears to be, unfortunately, a strain of heresy in the deal of the century by accepting the right of Palestinians to a state in the land of Israel when the Jewish people was conceived by the Creator to be the unique sovereign nation here, starting with the very first Jew, Abraham. In the first conversation between the Almighty and Abraham in the Bible is the command from the Almighty to him to go to a country that God will show him. And this starts the ball rolling. The narrative that the literary critics might call a family saga that ends 500 years later, the last lines in the five books of Moses show us Moses, Abraham's great-grandson's great-grandson, standing on the east bank of the Jordan River, gazing longingly westward at the land promised to his great-grandfather's great-grandfather 500 years in the past. And then what comes in the Bible is 1,000 years of Jewish history in this country, which includes the expulsion to Babylon and the return. I said before that the promise of the land appears 180 times in the five books. That's a number I myself came up with. Once in studying the text, I noticed how frequently the promise is repeated in such expressions as, when you come into the land I'm giving you, you will do such and such, or you will not do such and such. So that at the time I counted all of the instances in the Parsha I was reading and wrote down the number and did that every week for a year. And at the end, added up the figures and came up with 180. That is 10 times 18. 10, the mystical number. Times the gematria of 18, that equals the word for life. 180 times the Torah promises this land to this people. Yet so many Jews today in Israel and abroad think Israel has to share this strip of land some 50 miles across with another nation, a phantom nation, whose religion is a form of Jew hatred. The news the other day was of Benny Gantz, who will work against the Prime Minister's desire to annex some of the real estate here, presumably because this colorless man still holds out hope for a deal with the victims of Zionism, who some say will, A, come to respect our right to an independent state here in our ancient homeland, and B, they will settle for a state even smaller than ours next door and be content with that state. This is the fantasy in the Gantz-type Jews here. And the reason for that persistent fantasy is the retreat from one's own authentic Jewish identity, which is religious. Theodor Herzl was a Reform Jew, and although the Reformers were angrily hostile to the Zionist movement, fearing the dual loyalties smear, they shared with the Zionists, still do, a belief in and a project to transform the Jewish identity into something that is other than religious. And the diaspora of the Jewish identity has been reduced to an ethnic identity, each ethnos having a history and a culture of customs and a diet. You know, Italian-Americans eat pizza, and Mexican-Americans eat tacos, and Jewish-Americans eat bagels. But when you do that, you jettison the essence of the Jewish identity and dissolve into the melting pot via intermarriage. In Israel, the drive to be normal, likewise, means not religious. In early 1993, when Shimon Peres secretly had Yossi Beilin and fellow post-Jews in secret talks with the Fatah terror cultists, he was interviewed on American television. I was watching, and he said the purpose of Zionism was the normalization of the Jewish people, which means, inter alia, no more of this chosen people stuff, no more turning one's nose up at eating pig meat, no more respect for the Torah's story of Sodom and Gomorrah. Today's post-Jewish Israelis revel in having a world-famous, in Tel Aviv, every year, gay pride parade.
In a time where feelings have become fact, where rational thought and common sense has disappeared, one man stands above it all.
I'm Howie Sobiker, your political hitman.
Local Hitman airs every Tuesday at 11:59 p.m. North American time, 7 a.m. Israeli time, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
Are you interested in transforming your life, drawing closer to the Creator, and uncovering the deeper meanings and hidden treasures in the Hebrew Bible?
Then join me, Rav Yitzhak Michelson.
And me, William Hall.
On the Science of Kabbalah, where we are seeking to narrow the gap between what we understand of our physical and spiritual worlds. So make sure to tune in every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
So this week in Israel, that is in Judea and Samaria, there's a noticeable hostility rising toward the deal of the century, whose very name, by the way, exposes its foundational misconception. It foresees a deal in which a Palestinian state will arise that will be willing to live in peace next door to the Jewish state, which exposes the misconception that the Arab Muslims here want a state, when they have rejected every plan for a state west of the river since the 1937 Peel Plan. And that has always been because every plan allowed for the existence of a Jewish state next door, which is Muslims they cannot tolerate. Asking them to recognize the right of Israel to exist is asking them to stop being Muslims. Every peace plan has failed because peace is not the goal of the other side. The goal is the destruction of Israel. And as Arabs, the prospect of looting the Jewish state after all the Jews have been killed, God forbid. There are absolutely no national markers or emblems of identity attached to this phantom nation. There's nothing Palestinian about these people. In 2016, the Arabs here opened outside Ramallah, the National Museum of the Palestinian Bible, which on opening day was perfectly empty of any artifact of Palestinian culture. Every room, every gallery, corridor, wall was empty. And when the director of the new museum was asked about this by the media, he said the artifacts were still being made outside the country, and there was a delay in shipping them in. These people are not Palestinians. They are Arabs, and they are Muslims. As Arabs, they crave the wealth we Jews created here. Before the rise of the modern Zionist movement, there was no Palestinian people here, and no Palestinian people ever built anything here, like a hospital or a school or a road. And as Muslims, which identity they cling to, because as Arabs there's little to take pride in, not when the Arabs' identity for thousands of years was coterminous with being outlaws, marauding Bedouin brigands. As Muslims, they cannot tolerate the existence of Israel, and as historically a tribal people, statehood has never been their goal. That is what world anti-Jewry has invented for them. Look at the fate of the Arab states that came into existence after the collapse of the Ottoman Caliphate. Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Libya, Yemen, they're killing each other in all of these places. All of them, as states, were the handiwork of foreign British and French bureaucrats. Statehood is not an Arab-Muslim thing. Indeed, as my book points out, for 40 years, that's a biblical generation after the San Remo Conference of April 1920 that put the League of Nations stamp on the Zionist project, the leader of the Arabs here, the Grand Mufti in Jerusalem, Haji Amin al-Husseini, was adamant that there's no such country as Palestine. And he was right. The Muslims in 14 centuries had never recognized a country with that name, a jurisdiction with that name. Haji Amin said the name of the country here was Syria, and its capital was Damascus. In March 1920, Haji Amin even motored up from Jerusalem to celebrate the crowning of Faisal as king of Syria in that ancient Arab town. 1935, in Tzfat, Mahmoud Abbas was born. And he was born in what Haji Amin in that year was saying was Syria. So he's a Syrian. And he doesn't need another state. Israel should tell him that as a Syrian, Israel will no longer recognize him as a Palestinian. Not until 1959 in Cairo the current and then current pharaoh in Egypt and head of the Arab League of States, Gamal Abdel Nasser, at a meeting in Arab League headquarters, bring up the new idea of referring to the Arab refugees from the war with Israel, the refugees, Arab refugees, as everybody called them, referring to them as the Palestinian entity. And never mind that most of the Arab refugees were called Arab refugees by that generic name because most were migrant workers in mandatory Palestine that had come in from all over the Arab world, not one of them calling himself a Palestinian. And in truth, there was nothing Palestinian about any of them. When in 1948, only the Jews had been proud in the mandatory period to call themselves Palestinian Jews, or for short, Palestinians. In fact, in that same year, 1959, when Nasser proposed the new tactic, a number one bestseller in the West was the historical romance novel Exodus, about the birth of the State of Israel, in which every reference to Palestinians in that book was to Zionist pioneers. In 1948, the Jews were the Palestinians and the Arabs were the Arabs. And that Israelis, Jews, have allowed the intellectual cancer of the Palestinians to grow and flourish has been the primary reason why Israel's PR is mostly worthless. Once one accepts the idea of a Palestinian people, Israel can have no positive image. The very word Palestinian has become an anti-Semitic word every time you hear it, every time you see it in print. It is inseparable from the Palestinian narrative, according to which Palestinians have been the victims of Zionism. In the 1920s, 30s, 40s, the word Palestinian referred to Jews. Today it refers to anyone but Jews. Today's Palestinians are mostly Muslim Arabs, Christian Arabs, some would include Arabic-speaking Druze, Muslim Circassians, Bedouin Arabs, all these sub-national communities. They are the Palestinians. No longer are the Jews considered Palestinians. And since the mind is like a computer, it has in its memory banks, for example, the knowledge that France belongs to the French, Turkey to the Turks, Russia to the Russians, and Palestine to the Palestinians. And since the Jews are not Palestinians, what are they doing here in Palestine? They are foreigners, racist, fascist, imperialists, who invaded Palestine and stole it from the indigenous Palestinians. Every time an otherwise well-intentioned Jew uses the term Palestinian, he shoots himself in the foot. He adopts the vocabulary of his mortal enemies and assists them in depriving the Jewish people of our right to own this country. Still, if he wants to be generous, to do what some would call the Christian thing, and share the promised land with the enemy, he should know Israel has been doing that for decades. At this very moment, check out the maps in my book. The Arabs in Lebanon, Syria, and Jordan are in possession of 53% of the classic map of Palestine, not to be confused with the League map. And if they want to hand over this 53% to so-called Palestinians, Israel would not stop them. A new state of Palestinians could come into being, and Israel would not have to abandon one square meter of the land it now controls. Israel at this moment rules less than half of historic Palestine, a.k.a. the Promised Land, with, unfortunately, the deal of the century foreseeing turning 70% of Judea and Samaria over to the anti-Semitic Muslim Arabs. No good. Okay, that's it for this edition of Phantom Nation. If you appreciate this free podcast, you can buy the book hardcover or for less than $10. There's a Kindle ebook for your smartphone. This week's music was provided by Memory of Eight, a pickup group from the Merkaz Ahav Yeshiva. And that was the first cut. The theme music is always Carmi Naor and Chilik Rank. And then we heard Yossi Azulai and conclude, as usual, with Yosef Karduner. Until next time, I'm Shai Matakoa. אבל זה משתלם לשמח את עצמו בהשם ושלא עשה אני גוי אוי 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 צריך לשמח את עצמו בכל הכוח להתאמץ לא ליפול למטה כן נכון זה קשה
אבל תדע זה כדאי לשמח את עצמו בהשם ובצדיקים כן, יש לנו חיים טובים אוי 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 תנוג להניח תפילין אוי בכל בוקר להתפלל לקדוש ברוך הוא אוי 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 להיות עבד של המלך המלך הגדול כן אוי 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 אוי
Get the inside news on Israel. At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candle lighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
Howdy, this is Rita from League City, Texas, now living in Israel. And though my heart may have belonged to Texas, it now belongs to Israel and all the fantastic show hosts at Israel News Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Michael Solomon from Kiryat Arba, Israel. And why do I love listening to Israel News Talk Radio? Because I love listening to the interesting interviews they do and their news reporting that most other media sources don't cover.
Hey, this is Nicole Eko from Malmo, Sweden. It gets pretty cold here in Sweden, so I love cuddling up with a warm cup of tea while I listen to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, this is Frank Morris from Tennessee. Me and my dog Buster really love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.